providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are shifting our focus more to the energy sector as we are chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. That's where Joseph dives into companies, stocks that you might be interested in and where he sees the setup for an investment angle. He also writes the Eye on Energy report, which is a free report that breaks down more of the fundamental drivers behind the broad energy prices, oil and natural gas. Joseph, as we always do, we're going to be starting off with the more big picture macro that is driving the underlying energy prices. Crude, we have seen a very nice run higher here. Crude really bottomed, I guess, kind of in late June, but it really started taking off just this month as it broke above kind of that 85 level and even broke above $90 as we are chatting later in the day on Wednesday. Crude is right around $91. Joseph, this seems to be a strong environment for oil. What's driving this more bullish narrative?
Well, there's a number of things going on. First thing, we have the cuts by OPEC and mostly by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia cut 1 million barrels. They originally were going to do it just for July, August. They then extended it to the end of September, and now they've extended it into the end of the year. And of course, we all know in November, December, winter comes when demand picks up. So they're hoping to tighten up inventories and keep prices in the 90s, for Brent. So we're looking at WTI around 91, Brent's around 95. So you've got some very healthy prices here for the industry. And the Canadian oil liquid stocks have done extremely well. Last week, there was a big conference, Peters & Co. in Toronto, and a lot of people were attending that. So the stocks got a lot of juice and support from that. And so we've got a dichotomy between the performance of the oily names and the natural gas and the pipeline stocks, the latter two not doing so well. And we can go into that as you want. From my point of view is, yes, OPEC has cut back, or Saudi Arabia has cut back by 1 million, but other OPEC members have not really supported that. You've seen a decent increase in Iran's productive capacity, Iraq's increases in capacity, Venezuela, Nigeria. The biggest has been Iran. They've gone from producing 2.5 million in Q1 of this year to 3 million in August, which was reported last week. And with the recent announcement of the deal to release hostages and $6 billion that had been paid for, oil paid for by South Korea, $6 billion was held U.S. in their banks, that has been released to Iran for use in specific ways, you know, medical stuff, anything, grain, food, but not for anything that the Americans consider not necessary for their economy, i.e. military equipment, stuff like that, i.e. buying stuff from Russia and selling stuff to Russia, as we've seen with the Ukraine war. So the key for me is that while Saudi has been reliable as a cutter and tightening up the markets, other OPEC members have been increasing production so that the total is only about 780,000 drop rather than the 2.2 million that everybody had forecast. And the U.S. in the same time has been, by increasing the length of the horizontals, even though we've seen the well count go down and the drilling rig count go down this week, last week we finally saw an increase, but we've had for multiple weeks declines. The U.S. is now producing 12.9 million barrels a day, up 800,000 barrels a day from a year ago. And production of natural gas, liquids, and renewables is up to 8.86 million, or up 730,000 from a year ago. So you add those two together, the domestic crude and the domestic liquids, and the U.S. has increased production by 1.53, more than offsetting what the Saudis cut. So I think that there's not really a shortage situation out there. And my guess is that as we watch the data from China and we see weak imports there, we see U.S. consumption slowing down during the fall season. Just to give you an example of that, The data that came out this morning showed the U.S. consumption at 20.9 million, down from 21 million a year ago, and overall it's down 0.4% from a year ago. So with these high prices and less consumer spending because of the higher gas price and higher food costs, we're seeing a bit of a slowdown. And to me, that really is a key for potentially a cool off until winter hits. And my guess is originally I thought we might see sub $75, but because of the extension by the Saudis to the end of the year, I'm thinking that the cool off period might get us back below 80, and that would give us our next buy signal. You may remember that we had a table pounding buy signal in two of them in March, one on March 13th, one March 15th, when the price of oil got down below $65, which was our target below 70. So we even went further, but that was related to the Credit Suisse take under by UBS. But we also had the bullish percentage index, the S&P Energy bullish percentage index, go below 10% bulls, which is to us as a buy signal, went down to 8.7. And today that signal is trading at 96% bulls. So that's another reason for us being cautious. Everybody who wants to own these stocks does own them. And, you know, if the pendulum swings like it normally does and we have a cool-off period, we think the price of crude will back off and we'll have another great buying opportunity before year-end.
Well, Joseph, it's a great point you make that much to do has been made about the Saudi Arabia cuts and the Russian cuts, but there's so many other countries in the Middle East and, to your point, the United States that have increased production. So it wouldn't surprise us either to see a little bit of a cool-off in the oil price itself. But if it gets down to 80, it won't be maybe as big of a table pounding buy as it was in March when it was sub 65. But do you anticipate that oil next year, after the winter and when we get into the first quarter next year, could possibly make it up to triple digits? We've seen more calls for $100 plus oil. And if so, what would the driver be? Would it be more of a demand push, or would it be something where the supply is going to get crimped by first quarter next year?
I think one of the reasons why we are where we are is geopolitical. This whole thing that's going on with Russia and with Saudi Arabia and Iran. So I think there's a lot of geopolitics involved in the price of oil. I do believe, though, that if we see the soft landing view occur in the second half of 2024, I'm expecting prices to be sustainably over $90. Could in a very cold period of time, if you have very cold weather in winter 24, 25, punch above 100? Could we punch above 100 if there's a geopolitical event where, you know, the Straits of Hormuz or the Straits of Malacca get blocked by an incident? Yes, you could see a spike up for that. So I'm looking for the greater than $100 oil be event-driven, but I think that's a greater than $90 oil will be weather-related.
Let's talk about the natural gas price as well, because natural gas, that is remaining below $3, but it has been arguably in, I guess, a little bit of an uptrend, maybe grinding higher. Again, not a whole lot of excitement in the natural gas price. However, hey, at least it's not sub $2 and it's closer to $3. Where does natural gas go from here as we get into winter?
Well, natural gas prices were sub $2 earlier in the year, if you recall. And, we're looking now at $2.75 for NYMEX, a little lower than that for AECO. And the natural gas-related stocks have been dormant and quiet and not really performed with the oil stock recovery that we've seen in recent months. So we think there's bargains there. Some of them have strong balance sheets, pay great dividends. You can get 7, 8, 9% yields on some of them. So we really like them. I bought this week for myself one of them because it's got a 9% dividend yield and a very strong balance sheet, and I know management very well. So there's bargains out there, and so people should be looking at the names they want to own. And if there's some exogenous event that drives the price of the stock down, take advantage of it. For example, the Enbridge, when they did that financing, it got hit pretty hard. You're pushing a 9% yield. That made a lot of sense to me for people who want total return, because if you're getting a 9% on a well-covered dividend with a great credit, and if the stock goes up 5-10%, that's a pretty good home run for conservative investors.
Yeah, so for those contrarians out there, they may want to look at some of the quality natural gas plays that have those nice dividends. If we shift over to the oilier names, though, or companies that are at least more leveraged to oil than the liquids and the natural gas, what areas of the oil space have your interest right now, Joseph?
Well, as I said, I'm cautious on the sector, and if I'm right that we go down 10 bucks from 90 built to below 80, a lot of these stocks have run 40, 50%, some even more than that. So a correction of $10 in the price, which is more than 10%, could mean a 20 or 30% decline in these stocks that had 50% plus runs. So from my point of view, I'm not really sticking my toes in buying oily names. I'm just taking advantage of the discarding of the natural gas names, which to me are bargain levels.
Okay. What attracts you to a natural gas stock then? Since you're liking some of those and the discrepancy you're seeing in price, what stands out to you in terms of quality companies?
Well, I'm looking for companies, number one, that are in the Montney, that have some liquids, that are in the fairway, that's going to benefit when a lot of the gas in Northeast BC moves towards the coast for the LNG Canada project. That means they won't be coming into Alberta and supplies will tighten up in Alberta. And companies in that Montney, Duvernay, or right across the province of Alberta will benefit from the stronger natural gas prices. So that's number one. Number two, I want them to have a lot of growth potential. So as more LNG projects come on the West Coast, they could benefit from them. Third, I want a lot of insider ownership. I want them there before me. And then I want companies that have strong balance sheets so that you know the dividend is safe. And names that stand out are Birchcliff Energy, Pinecliff Energy. You know, there's a number of names here that where you see, you know, good dividends where the companies are not really being watched by the market. And you can do some cherry picking and pick out some very, very good names with some very, very good yields. And to me, you can either buy domestic ones. There's some international ones that have good dividend yields. So there's a lot of choice here that we cover on our coverage list for our clients. And, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense for people.
Well, Joseph, just on the topic of dividends and the strength of the balance sheet for these companies, both oil and natural gas companies, you know, we've had a lot of people in the market pushing the dividend as a good place to camp out. But we've also seen a strange environment where you can actually save money now in T-bills or in money markets and make 5-6%. Has that changed the interest from investors into some of these, even the higher yielding stocks, because there is still the equity risk in those where there's less risk in a money market or a T-bill? And the other part of that question would be, how much of their free cash do you want to see companies putting into growth versus returning to investors?
Great questions there. Let's start with the issue of the companies. You know, the balance sheets matter. So, you know, you want under 1x debt to cash flow. You want them approaching where they're looking at shareholder returns, where if their stock is trading below PDP, proved developed producing, that there's going to be a normal course issuer bid to nibble away there. And then you also want the dividend that you're being paid while you wait. A lot of the people in Toronto in the money management side like the NCIB because they want the shrinking capitalization. Retail investors want to get paid. Now, your question about the size of money market funds yielding about, you know, over 5%, a lot of people are still uncomfortable with what's going on in the market. They're uncomfortable with the economy. They're worried about, you know, the cost of living. They're worried about potentially losses in their real estate because of higher interest rates impacting home prices in their local markets. And so a lot of people, particularly in the United States, don't want to be in the banks because the banks are seeing runs of deposits. So that's why you're seeing such massive amounts of money, over $5 trillion in money market funds, because you don't want your bank shut down and not having access to your money. And the banks are paying you a piddling 0.15 or so percent. And so you can boost your returns significantly going to a money market fund for your most conservative money that you may have put away for holidays, retirement, or whatever. I think that makes a lot more sense in the U.S. In Canada, we have a very strong banking sector, so that's not as much of an issue. But I do think that people should be focused on looking at the companies and the strength of their balance sheets. And if they have a good dividend equal to what you get in the bank, then there's almost no risk to being a buyer. And if we do see the LNG business take off into the end of the decade with more than just LNG Canada Train 1, then we will probably be looking at $4 or $5 gas. And these companies are very frugal. They're watching their cost structures. And if the price of natural gas pops a few bucks, it's going to go 80, 90 cents of that to the bottom line.
How do you go about analyzing the stability of these dividends too, understanding that there are kind of the normal dividends that get paid, but then also special dividends? Look, people are always looking for not just that return in terms of cash flow, also capital gains, but they want to be sure that they are going to keep that certain yield in the dividend.
Yeah, there's a couple number of companies that have a base dividend, Paramount and Tourmaline, but then they pay pay special dividends when they have excess cash flow. All of them have fabulous balance sheets, lots of growth and upside, so they do like paying specials. Other companies like Hemisphere pay variable dividends, and their view is we don't know if there's going to be another crisis in the market, so we don't want investors to be expecting it as a guarantee. That's why we call it a variable, and if the finances of the company are strong and the price of the commodity gives us free cash flow, those dividends will continue to be paid.
Joseph, what about the growth wedge, though? Because a lot of these companies have been returning money to shareholders through dividends or through share buybacks, which, you know, the share buybacks the institutions like, the dividends retail investors like. But what about putting money in the ground and growing their resources or growing their potential future pipeline of projects?
Well, I think the key is facilities. Because if you're in the oil and natural gas business, you need to have access to facilities, transportation. And of course, in the natural gas side, we really are tight right now. So until LNG, until Coastal Gas gets on and brings on 2 BCF a day of more capacity, it's going to be a little bit tight. And then also, it takes time to get the equipment to build the big compressor stations that are needed. So companies like Tourmaline have long lead times to get their Conroy project on and are moving forward with it. That's going to bring on a lot more production for them. Other companies are doing tweaks, adding more compressors, using more pressure. And I like the companies that have a growth wedge rather than are just standing still and depleting their reserves life by, if they keep the same production and they don't increase reserves and RLIs go down. I'm not as much a fan of those kinds of companies. I prefer companies that have a growth wedge. It may not be much now, but they do have, in the outlier years where they have a project that they're doing delineation drilling on. They're looking at building facilities. They're looking at getting gas market access to the States or Eastern Canada. And as, the next few years develops, they'll lock those down with contracts. And then we could see significant volume growth in 26, 27, 28 as two or three more LNG projects come on stream.
So how do you like to see this growth funded then, Joseph, balancing out potential debt, but still, a lot of these companies are cash flowing. How do you want this growth to be funded?
I think it should be done from cash flow. There's a report out in the U.S. about a week ago saying that U.S. companies in the energy space are giving back more than half of their cash flow to to investors via NCIB and dividends. Going back just a few years ago, they were spending more than cash flow when everybody was chasing growth in the Permian and the Eagleford and the Montney and the Duvernay, both sides of the border. So that's a little bit different than what we're seeing now.
Well, Joseph, let's also talk about the oil services side, whether it's pipelines or infrastructure or drilling companies. Some of them have pulled back a little bit. What's your outlook for the oil services sector?
Well, the drillers are doing well because the drilling activity and the pricing has done well. So you've seen pop in CES and Ensign and Precision. But if you look at the pipeline infrastructure side, TC Energy, is down quite a bit from its high, as is Enbridge that we talked about before. So investors looking for total return should be looking at those stocks on weakness. I think Enbridge got down to like $44. I think TC Energy got down to like $46. So I think that you might be able to get those stocks down in those ranges again, a couple bucks lower than they are today. But if they bounce 4 or 5 points, 10%, plus you get yourself that 8-9% dividend yield, I think most investors who are conservative investors would say that's very, very nice total return.
What about some of the smaller stocks too, Joseph? Some of the ones that are maybe a bit newer to the space or are really trying to ramp up their production, not paying too much of a dividend, bit more on the risk profile, the higher risk stocks. How are they setting up in your eyes?
Well, some of them are doing the growth, but moderate growth. A lot of them are still trying to improve their balance sheets because they had a lot of debt problems just a couple of years ago, and they're running gun shy here. If we had $4 gas and $90 oil, I think it would be pedal to the metal. But if you have one commodity working and the other commodity not, and you're in both commodities, I think that gives you pause to how quickly you're going to be pushing the pedal on CapEx. So I think we need maybe into mid next year when we start seeing benefits from the LNG Canada filling the coastal pipeline, maybe a good winter that takes inventories down, maybe Europe starts seeing that they need to refill their LNG, which is reasonably full now, but they're going to have to be competing with China and other countries, South Korea, Japan, etc., and that means prices will firm up. And that will mean firmer prices in North America as well.
Well, Joseph, maybe one more on the higher risk side of the industry, and that is the exploration and development companies. We don't talk about them that much because there's so much action in the producing companies, but do you think we'll see more M&A? Do you think we'll see more companies that bolt on some of these better development project or advanced exploration projects to bring them into the fold?
Yeah, we like the exploration side, and we've been covering Touchstone, Valeura, Southern, Gran Tierra, Alvo Petro, to name just a few. On the international side, Vermilion, of course, is the big boy there. And we like them because we want the companies to spend, 10, 20, 30% of their budget on exploration, as well as on development drilling to grow their volumes. And these guys are doing it. So they don't get as much attention as you say, but they're great companies. And I'm watching volume growth in, this year, Touchstone just brought on their Cascadura discovery. So they're gone from under 2,000 BOEs a day. In Q4, they'll be producing over 10,000 BOEs a day. That's attractive to me for my risk portion of my portfolio, where I'm looking for sizable capital gains from companies that have done very well with the drill bit.
All right, Joseph, before I get you out of here, I do want to just quickly update everybody on your conference coming up October 14th in Alberta, just outside of Calgary. I will be there again this year. I'm looking forward to sitting into a number of presentations, catching up with a number of companies that I've seen over the past few years. Just remind everybody about this conference, what they can expect, and I will post a link so everyone can also sign up.
Yeah, it's going to www.catchtheenergyconference.com. We're having 45 companies this year, up from 34. In the clean tech area, the TMX has sponsored that last year with 5 companies. It was such a success that they've got 10 companies coming this year, and they're in the process of landing the last one that they need for that. We happened to have had 3 companies taken over, Essential Energy, CWC, and Pipestone. So we're now filling those vacancies with companies. And so we're, as I mentioned earlier, Hammerhead is now coming and is Freehold. And we're looking to fill the last 2 spots because of the takeovers. And one company, the person who was doing the presentation, wasn't able because of a conflict in the schedule. So we have 2 left to fill, and we're working on that. But, if you want to look at the list of names, and you'll see that it's a variety from all the way to the bigs being Tourmaline and things like Crescent Point and then you go into the smaller cap names like, and you'll see there names like InPlay, Hemisphere, Southern, Valeura. So there's a lot of really interesting companies depending upon the size. And if you're looking for dividend and income or dividend and capital gain or dividend, there's lots of choices there for investors. Please take a look at the website. Again, www.catchtheenergyconference.com. Tickets are moving very, very quickly, and we expect to be the seats taken down by the last week of September, first week of October. So if you're interested, it's in Calgary at Mount Royal University, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning and finishing at 4:30 in the afternoon. Lots of hotels that you can get access to through the travel website. So please come, and I'll be at our booth for part of the time. I'll be doing the opening plenary speech. We do have two interesting things. Our premier is coming to open the conference. So Premier Daniel Smith will open the conference, which is a first for us. And then Step Energy, one of the frac companies, is bringing one of their new Tier 4 frac units, as well as their newest command center for a coil tubing unit. So people will get to see some equipment that is now being used in the field, as well as going to see the company presentations and going to their booth and getting to know companies they own or better, or going to see companies they'd like to own and getting that face time, which is something that is unique to our conference.
All right, Joseph, thank you very much for the update on the energy sector and your conference. Again, I will be there this year. I'm looking forward to sitting into a lot of the presentations where you do give the companies a longer period of time to present the story and also answer questions from everybody watching. So I do value and get a lot out of those presentations. We'll chat with you again next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. And everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. Please keep in touch with Chad and I through email. We love hearing from each and every one of you. We'll be back at it next week. Everyone, have a great rest of your weekend.